Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon, this is the Shai Rana Show with your host Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM.
If I were the devil, first thing that I'd do, come off as somebody who gave a damn about you. I'd let you catch a peek of all your greatest desires, and I'd watch the flames in your eyes burn like hellfire. Find all the wolves in the land, and I'd make them fight each other tooth and nail, hand to hand. I'd find all the sheep and make them herd up the pot, 'cause once the wolves have killed each other, sheep are what I want. The devil walks among us, friends, I know this is true, and I don't know if he's red, and I don't know if he's blue. One thing that I know, we need to take a look around, 'cause if I were the devil, this would be my playground. And as I place that crown upon my furrowed brow, well, I'd shine in tears of joy that come crashing from the crowd. But once I have the parents and I brainwash the world, I'll be in every schoolhouse lecturing little boys and girls. The devil walks among us, friends, I know this is true, and I don't know if it's me, and I'd be damned if it were you. One thing that I know, we need to take a look around, 'cause if I were the devil, this would be my playground. For my final act, I tell you what it'd be, I'd have everyone so medicated they could never see. My cloven hooves or horned head would be all disguised, and the best part of it all is they'll comply with their demise. The devil walks among us, friends, I know this is true, and I don't know if he's red, and I don't know if he's blue. One thing that I know, we need to take a look around, 'cause if I were the devil, this would be my playground. If I were the devil, this world was mine to see, I'd see all the atrocities and it'd probably frighten me. So I'd head back home with a story to tell. I'd tell all my demon friends that I always preferred hell.
Welcome to the Shai Onana Show. This is Zain Al-Amin hosting, and I have joining me. I have Sataria because we were in Pledge Drive. And we're going to give you some numbers to call in a minute. But we just heard If I Were the Devil by Colby Acuff. Of course, there's a the reason I played that is I love the line where he says, "The devil walks amongst us." That is true. And I don't know if he's red or if he's blue, because this show has really exposed how this that dinosaur Biden has led us to the devastation we're dealing with now, to the genocide that we're dealing with now. And that's the reference to the red and the blue, of course. Anybody who's right now taking partisanship in one party or the other is guilty of supporting genocide, period. There's probably one or two Democratic representatives that are innocent at this point. But I also wanted to start with a piece of good news, is that I just got the word that the federal judge has ordered the release of Dr. Badr Khan Suri of Georgetown University, whose only guilt was of teaching peace and being married to a Palestinian woman. And he has been detained in a center in Texas. And now this federal judge has ordered him to be released immediately. And this is the third person where a federal judge has ordered for this release. And this is a great relief, because what was happening with the Trump administration is that they were trying to test this out on green card holders and other residents that were not citizens, so that they can apply it to citizens that they don't like. You know, first it would be about Palestine. Of course, they would, as they say, first they came for the Palestinians, and then they would come for anybody that opposes him politically, even to the degree, as we saw recently, arresting a judge who was trying to protect some immigrants. So that's a piece of good news. And this is the kind of news that you're going to get here. The only other place you're going to get immediate news like this, other than the Shai Nana show, of course, is from the great Amy Goodman, which plays on this station every morning at 8 a.m. We're sort of the hour that expands on what's happening in the Arab world from that show. And that's how we started 7 years ago and still continuing. And if you want us to still continue and have somebody like me voluntarily, I don't get paid for this. This is because I know that as democracy is diminishing in this country, the WPFW becomes more important than ever. And this show, as they come for Palestinians and Arabs and expand from there, becomes even more critical than ever. So if you like this, if you've been gaining knowledge from this news, as those that approached me at the gala at the 48th anniversary of WPFW, who told me they didn't know anything about what's going on, even in, from the social media, until they started listening to my show. And as I've been mentioning, that as the mainstream media is taking a turn right now to say what we've been saying for the last year and a half, I'm sure you're getting confirmation that we've been telling the truth, and we've been urging people to act way before, at the start of this genocide. And that's been our focus. And if you care about this kind of news, and if you care about this oasis of democracy in the middle of fascism, please pick up the phone and call 202-588-9739. Again, it's 202-588-9739. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Zane. I want to invite the listeners to, as you said, support WPFW support Zane and the hard work he does to bring this program each and every week with this information you just cannot get anywhere else on your radio dial. So give us a call. Make your donation at 202-588-9739, or you can click donate now at WPFWFM.org. Our goal for the hour is $500. I know, Zane, that you can do that because I know that your listeners not only love and appreciate you, but also WPFW. So again, that's 202-588-9739.
Thank you, Sitaria. And I just wanted to share this little short piece here by Caitlin Johnson, who's been an amazing commentator. I believe she hails from Australia. This is the kind of thing I've been sharing, is what I'm listening to, what I think is most important to relay to you. And you can also do your own, your own listening to expand beyond the clips that I play for you. But what the importance of this clip, and especially during this pledge drive, is to show you that now, after a year and a half, mainstream media is finally reporting what Shai Nana has been reporting for the last year and a half, and the last 6 years, because history did not start on October 7. So let's listen to Caitlin Johnston talk about how multiple Western media outlets are changing their tune.
Multiple Western press outlets have suddenly pivoted hard against Israel. After a year and a half of genocidal atrocities, the editorial boards of numerous British press outlets have suddenly come out hard against Israel's genocidal onslaught in Gaza. The first drop of rain came last week from the Financial Times in a piece by the editorial board titled "The West's Shameful Silence on Gaza," which denounces the U.S. and Europe for having issued barely a word of condemnation of their allies' criminality, saying they, quote, should be ashamed of their silence and stop enabling Netanyahu to act with impunity. Then came The Economist with a piece titled "The War in Gaza Must End," which argues that Trump should pressure the Netanyahu regime for a ceasefire, saying that, quote, the only people who benefit from continuing the war are Mr. Netanyahu, who keeps his coalition intact, and his far-right allies, who dream of emptying Gaza and rebuilding Jewish settlements there. On Saturday came an editorial from The Independent titled "End the Deafening Silence on Gaza, It is Time to Speak Up," arguing that British PM Keir Starmer, quote, should be ashamed that he said nothing, especially since Mr. Netanyahu has now announced new plans to expand the already devastating bombardment of Gaza, and saying that it is time for the world to wake up to what is happening and to demand an end to the suffering of the Palestinians trapped in the enclave. On Sunday, the Guardian editorial board joined in with a write-up titled "The Guardian View on Israel and Gaza. Trump can stop this horror. The alternative is unthinkable," saying the U.S. president has the leverage to force through a ceasefire. If he does not, he will implicitly signal approval of what looks like a plan of total destruction. The Guardian asks, what is this if not genocidal? When will the U.S. and its allies act to stop the horror, if not now? To be clear, these are editorials, not op-eds. This means that they are not the expression of one person's opinion, but the stated position of each outlet as a whole. We've been seeing the occasional op-ed, which is critical of Israel's actions throughout the Gaza Holocaust, in the mainstream Western press. But to see the actual outlets come out aggressively denouncing Israel and its Western backers all at once is a very new development. Some longtime Israel supporters have unexpectedly begun changing their tune as individuals as well. Conservative MP Mark Pritchard said at the House of Commons last week that he had supported Israel, quote, at all costs, for decades, but said, quote, I got it wrong, and publicly withdrew that support over Israel's actions in Gaza. He said, for many years, I've been in the House, 20 years, I have supported Israel pretty much at all costs, quite frankly, but today, I want to say that I got it wrong, and I condemn Israel for what it is doing to the Palestinian people in Gaza and indeed in the West Bank, and I'd like to withdraw my support right now for Shael Ben Ephraim, who has been aggressively denouncing campus protesters and accusing Israel's critics of blood libel throughout the Gaza Holocaust, has now come out and publicly admitted that Israel is committing a genocide which must be opposed. He said, it took me a long time to get to this point, but it's time to face it. Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. Between the indiscriminate bombings of hospitals, starvation of the population, plans for ethnic cleansing, slaughter of aid workers and cover-ups, there is no escaping it. Israel is trying to eradicate the Palestinian people. We can't stop it unless we admit it. It is odd that it has taken all these people a year and a half to get to this point. I myself have a much lower tolerance for genocide and the mass murder of children. If you've been riding the genocide train for 19 months, it looks a bit weird to suddenly start screaming about how terrible it is and demanding to hit the brakes all of a sudden. These people have not suddenly evolved a conscience, they're just smelling what's in the wind. Once the consensus shifts past a certain point, there's naturally going to be a mad rush to avoid being among the last to stand against it, because you know you'll be wearing that mark for the rest of your life in public after history has had a clear look at what you did. This is, after all, coming at a time when the Trump administration is beginning to rub Netanyahu's fur the wrong way, recently prompting the Israeli prime minister to say, I think we'll have to detox from U.S. security assistance, that's an actual quote, when Washington went over Tel Aviv's head and negotiated directly with Hamas to secure the release of an American hostage. The U.S. is reportedly leaving Israel out of more and more of its negotiations on international affairs in places like Yemen and Iran. Something is changing. So if you're still supporting Israel after all this time, my advice to you is to make the change while you still can. There's still time to be the first among scoundrels in the mad rat race to avoid being the last to start acting like you always opposed the Gaza Holocaust.
That was a reading by Tom Foley of Caitlin Johnson's dispatch on how multiple Western media outlets are changing their tune now. You know, it took more than a year and a half, close to 2 years, before they started to recognize that what people have been sharing around the world, what has the global South been sharing around the world on social media, to acknowledge that this is a genocide, especially when the State of Israel and the IDF soldiers are bragging about it and not mincing words about it. So that shift is happening, and it's real. And what is most shocking in that shift is that we have Tories, who are the equivalent to conservative Republicans here in Britain, saying we no longer support Israel. And they're doing it before the Labour Party does, which is equivalent to the Democratic Party. That's pretty amazing stuff. And the headlines are no longer mincing words, whether it's in the New York Times or the conservative Financial Times. They're no longer mincing words, that they're saying that there's no doubt what's happening is genocide. We are in a historic moment, the value of which will be weighed later, but we can't wait for history to make its judgments. And this is why, when for people who wondered, how, were mystified when you first learn about the Holocaust caused by the Nazis against the Jews, you wonder what were the Germans doing? What the hell were, how did they agree to all of this? Well, now you see evidence. You see all the passive Americans. You see the complicity of all of our representatives, with exception to a handful, call not only being silent, but actually saying, kill them all, starve them, we don't care. Everybody's guilty, including the children. These are our own representatives. These are the people that are supposed to be taking care of our medical medic aid, our social services, our well-being, our safety, our security, are calling for the starvation of children, which has been happening now. And every international human rights organization is saying what's ha famine has set in Gaza, because there's been a complete blockade of food. So if at some point, if you've been passive, this is the time to step in and to step up and say, I'm against this, and confront your representatives about it. Otherwise, it'll be interesting when your grandchildren ask you, Grandpa, Grandma, what did you do in that moment? What did you do when they were massacring men, women, and children, civilians, with bunker buster bombs? What did you do when they were destroying schools? What did you do when they were destroying mosques and churches? What did you do when they were killing doctors in the hospitals? What did you do when they bombed the hospital just to kill one journalist? What did you do when they destroyed every university in Gaza? And you're not going to have an answer. And you're going to say something like, oh, it's complicated. And they're going to say, no, but we see the pictures and the evidence. What is so complicated about the, having children being amputated without anesthetic because Israel blocked all medical supplies? You know, this caregiver, Miss Rachel, that deals with children, who's been visiting with these children who've had to suffer through amputations, of their limbs because of because without anesthetic, and Miss Rachel is now being called all sorts of things by the Hasbara, the Zionist propaganda. This woman, who's the equivalent to, for some of you who are not familiar with Miss Rachel, it's like calling Mr. Rogers or any of the Sesame Street, hosts, terrorists. That's what's happening, the absurdity of what's happening. Unfortunately, the tide is turning a little late, but nonetheless, we have to help it tack a little sharper than it's been doing, away from this genocide. And with again, I just wanted to urge you, we have we're in pledge drive time, and we have a goal of $500 to meet. If you commit to have monthly donations, you can cover much of it. And again, and yet, we always say no donation is too small and no donation is too large. And the one number I wanted to give you before handing it over to Sataria Joyner, who is supporting me on this pledge drive, the number I want to give first, and Sataria will give you more information, it's 202-588-9739. And there's multiple ways also for you to donate through the website or through Cash App, too. There's and through an 800 number. Hello, Sataria.
Hello, hello. Well, I just want to remind people, well, actually to reiterate what you said, Zane, people can become sustainers and give small increments each month. The Sustainer Program does just that. It helps to sustain WPFW. It allows us to budget each month and know what we have to spend and how to, we can grow in between drives. And you can become a monthly sustainer for as little as $10 a month and as much as your budget will allow. And so we thank everyone who joins our Sustainer Program, and we invite you to join them and to join WPFW. The information that Zane brings you cannot be found elsewhere. It is not only critical that we hear it and listen to it and know how it not only applies to other areas of the world, but how it also applies here at home. If that is important to you, the message is important to you, if this information is important to you, please make your donation, 202-588-9739. You can also click donate now at wpfwfm.org. Cash App, you can Cash App us at $WPFWFM. However it is you choose to give, we implore you to give now, because this is a critical time in public media to show that we can sustain ourselves with your help. WPFW has been here for 48 years, commercial free, underwriting free, because at WPFW, you make the difference. The listener makes the difference. 202-588-9739.
Thank you, Sataria. And we have to remember that for those 48 years that WPFW started, as an anti-war radio station and brought those kind of rare truths that nobody was bringing, because we're not accountable to corporations. We're accountable to you only. And that's the advantage here, that's what immunizes us against censorship, against somebody dictating somebody dictating the content of the show. And that's why it's, even with the little resources we have on this show, we're ahead of the curve from mainstream media. And we're also ahead of the curve with censorship, as you'll see in the next segment that we're gonna play. What we provide every week here at this show is who is providing the best news online, because the mainstream media has not given it to us. And also, as these individuals or organizations, as they are censored, we are saving and archiving the news that they're putting forward, and looking at who is now still able to tell the truth, and we're projecting that truth. That's why I always call WPFW and the Shy Nana show as the bullhorn for justice, that we amplify those voices. And that brings me to the next segment, where we've been sharing news from antiwar.com, which has been really giving the up-to-date news about what's happening around the Arab world. And also, obviously, we are tied, we follow Africa now, and we're inextricable from the news in Africa, as you know, and especially right now when we're looking at what's happening in Burkina Faso, in the Congo, and also looking at the fact that the history of the Arab world and the history of Africa, the African continent, is inextricable from the other, because when we talk about what the state of Israel has done to the Middle East, we let's not forget what the state of Israel's, what role it played in South Africa, meaning siding with the white supremacist regime, which tells you about the identity of the real identity of this project, of this Zionist project. And I want to say one more thing that this brilliant doctor, Lebanese doctor, that had confronted a group of people who think that they can just because the pigment of their skin is different, that they can't be called a colonizer. But when Zionists were posting, how could we could be white colonizers, called white colonizers, when we are and they put forward people of color on the front line, even though we know the color of the leadership of the Zionist project, that it is white, it's European, and it's white supremacists. And she, the doctor, answers them by saying, "Yes, you are white colonialist, even if your skin tone isn't white. White colonialism isn't about pigment. It's about your position within systems of domination. It's not who you are, it's what you protect. It's the power you serve, the violence you excuse, the silence you enforce." And I love this one, especially as an academic. She ends up with the silence you enforce, because we know that there are people of color, and including Arabs and African Americans and so on, that are basically enforcing, serving this violence, excusing this silence, and enforcing this silence, as we've seen it with on campuses, when black and brown security, campus security, is blocking the view of the cops that are choking a Columbia University student. This is the most despicable act, and these people are lower than the actual people that are doing the choking, and it's because they have no principles, no ideology, no print. All they are is crass careerists, and that's what the universities, why being what's impacting universities right now in the DMV area and around the nation, is that we have crass careerists that don't even have an ideology or any principles, that are just trying to save their jobs and advance in the world to serve capital. If you want this to continue, if you want this kind of reporting to continue, and if you want this news updates that you're about to hear that are of the moment and are the most critical items of the week, not only do we provide you with the news, but we also provide you with where to go, meaning the actions that are happening in the city in the upcoming days. We always give you where to go. We don't just catalog the miseries of the world. We tell you where to go, what to do, and how to vent your frustrations, and how to deal with the issues. So if you care about that, again, call in, be a sustainer, as Sataria said. It takes $10 a month. That's nothing, but it's everything for us, especially with the modest goal that we have for the hour. Be a monthly sustainer, $10 a month. Call 202-588-9739. You can also go online, and if you're listening nationally or internationally, you can go online, wpfwfm.org. That's WPFWFM.org, and click on the donate button, go to the Shai Nana show, and donate there. And we have on the website also a way that you can pay through PayPal too. So we're making it easy for you. And I believe, Sataria, there's a Cash App
Yes, you can cash app us at $WPFWFM. You can also text to donate. You text the letters WPFWFM to the number 801-801. So you use those numbers, 801-801, as the phone number. And in the body of your message, you send WPFWFM, and it'll send you the instructions on how to donate via your phone.
Oh.
However it is you choose to give, support this wonderful media resource and this great program bringing you such pertinent information for today.
Thank you, Sataria. And now we'll listen to the segment that's coming to us from antiwar.com to update us on what's happening in the Arab world and in the world at large.
Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from antiwar.com. This is anti-war news for Tuesday, May 13th, 2025. All right, first thing, I just wanted to let everybody know that I will be taking off work tomorrow. I'm going to be driving up to DC for the Pierre Spray Award, which is a journalism award. And this year, the winners are two Palestinian journalists in Gaza. They've both written for 972 magazine and other publications. Their names are Ruwaida Amir and Ibtissam Mahdi. I was checking out their work for 972 magazine, and they write a lot of kind of personal pieces to give you a real feel for what the day-to-day life is like in Gaza under this horrific bombing campaign and siege. So two people who certainly really deserve an award. So that means that there will be no show tomorrow. So this is that I'm recording right now on Monday night for the Tuesday show. So this means I won't be recording a show Tuesday night for Wednesday. So no Wednesday show, but then I'll be back with a Thursday and Friday show. So just taking the one day off. All right, so let's get into the news here. The first story is a pretty big one. Hamas releases U.S. Israeli captive after U.S. talks. So on Monday, Hamas released Edon Alexander, a 21-year-old New Jersey-born IDF soldier who was captured during the October 7th Hamas-led attack on Israel. Alexander was handed over to the Red Cross, which transferred him to the Israeli military, and he was freed as a result of U.S. engagement with Hamas that did not involve Israel. According to a report from Axios, President Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, negotiated with Hamas chief negotiator Khalil al-Hayya through a mediator. The U.S. made clear to Hamas that the release of Alexander for free ahead of Trump's visit to the Middle East would go a long way with the U.S. administration. So that this is a goodwill gesture from Hamas toward the U.S., releasing him. So Hamas said in a statement on the release, quote, "The Al-Qassam brigades have just released the Israeli soldier holding American citizenship, Edon Alexander, following communications with the U.S. administration. This comes as part of the mediator's efforts to reach a ceasefire, open the border crossings, and allow the entry of aid and relief for our people in the Gaza Strip," end quote. So Trump announced that Alexander would be released in a post on Sunday and said he hoped it would be the first of the final step toward ending what he called this brutal conflict. So it sounds like the Trump administration does seem to want a real ceasefire deal now. The question is, are they actually going to put the pressure on Israel that's going to be necessary for this? Israel refused to implement a ceasefire for Monday for the release of Alexander. They only agreed to a brief pause to create a safe corridor. Netanyahu said in a statement, quote, "Israel has not committed to a ceasefire of any kind or the release of terrorists, but only to a safe corridor that will allow for the release of Edon," end quote. Netanyahu also said on Monday that he would send a negotiation team to Qatar on Tuesday, but vowed that the talks would continue under fire and that Israel would continue preparing for a major escalation of its genocidal war. Israel's plans to expand the assault on Gaza involve destroying every remaining building, concentrating the civilian population into a tiny part of southern Gaza, and pressuring them to leave as part of an ethnic cleansing campaign. Netanyahu said, quote, "We are in the midst of critical days in which Hamas has been presented with a deal that would enable the release of our hostages. The negotiations will continue under fire during preparations for an intensification of the fighting," end quote. Netanyahu said that he spoke with Witkoff about the possibility of implementing a framework for the release of the hostages before the expansion of the fighting. So what Netanyahu is saying is, even if there's some kind of hostage deal, we're still going to go ahead with this huge escalation. So he seems to be rejecting if there is any kind of real push from the U.S. for an actual ceasefire. And Gaza remains under a total Israeli blockade, which was implemented more than 70 days ago, pushing the civilian population into starvation. Just see horrific pictures of children suffering from malnutrition every single day coming out of Gaza. And the aid trucks are ready to go in. Israel just continues to block them. So this deal to free Alexander was reached amid a series of reports about President Trump being frustrated with Netanyahu. According to a report from NBC News, Trump is opposed to Israel's plans to escalate in Gaza because he thinks it will make it harder to rebuild, but there's no indication the president is willing to use U.S. military aid as leverage to pressure Netanyahu to reach a lasting peace deal. I do think the U.S. getting this one Israeli captive released is going to really increase the domestic pressure on Netanyahu. So, you know, there's a chance things could change, but as they stand, the massacres continue every day and the starvation siege continues. Israel's Channel 12 has reported that Witkoff recently told the families of Israeli captives who remain in Gaza that the U.S. wants to return the hostages, but Israel's not ready to end the war. He added that, quote, "Israel is prolonging the war, even though we do not see where further progress can be made," end quote. Israel has repeatedly rejected Hamas's offer to release all remaining Israeli captives. So, you know, I think if there really is a change here from the Trump administration, I mean, there has already been a change in some sense. We saw the ceasefire in Yemen, even though the attacks on Israel are going to continue. Because the U.S. failed to stop the Houthis from attacking Israel, and they essentially gave up. And they seem to do that without Israel, and they seem to go ahead and do this without Israel. I mean, the Netanyahu, I know his aide, his advisor, Ron Dermer, tried to sabotage. Well, they did successfully sabotage the chances of a deal like this, I think back in March when the U.S. and Hamas were reported to be holding direct talks. But they went ahead with this anyway. But Netanyahu's saying that basically no matter what happens, even if we get the hostages, we're still going to escalate and just completely destroy the place and try to carry out ethnic cleansing. And so the next story is more on that. Netanyahu says the ethnic cleansing of Gaza is inevitable. So Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday that the forced removal of Palestinians from Gaza was inevitable. He said this at the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, according to the Jerusalem Post. This is what he said, quote, "We are destroying more and more homes, and Gazans have nowhere to return to. The only inevitable outcome will be the wish of Gazans to emigrate outside of the Gaza Strip," end quote. Israeli officials have made clear that the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population of Gaza is their ultimate goal, but it remains unclear where the Palestinians would go. Netanyahu told the committee that the main problem preventing what he calls emigration is the lack of countries willing to take in the Palestinians. Israel has maintained a total blockade on Gaza since March 2nd and has developed plans to start bringing in aid using private U.S. security contractors to use food to lure starving Palestinians into this tiny sliver of southern Gaza. That's what they want to do. They want to corral them all into a little piece of southern Gaza and then from there try to get them to leave. And Netanyahu actually said in this Knesset committee that the aid would be conditional on the Palestinians not returning to where they came from. So, I mean, you know, it's just very clear what the plan is here, what Netanyahu wants to do. And Netanyahu also said that Israel was currently not planning to establish Jewish settlements in Gaza at the moment because President Trump is interested in having the U.S. take over the territory. So he's saying Trump really actually wants the U.S. to take over Gaza. So Limor Sanhar Melek, he's an Israeli MK and a member of the Jewish Power Party, which is Ben Gavir's party. He suggested that American Jews could move to Gaza. He said, quote, "Bring the Jews from the United States. This way we'll hit two birds with one stone," end quote. So these are the conversations that Netanyahu is having with the Israeli Knesset. All right, so the next one here, Israeli strikes kill 29 in Gaza in 24 hours amid starvation blockade. So Gaza's health ministry said Monday that Israeli attacks killed 29 Palestinians and wounded 94 as Israel has continued its strikes amid a total blockade that's been imposed for more than 70 days. The health ministry said that another four bodies of Palestinians killed by previous Israeli attacks were recovered from the rubble. Israeli attacks included overnight strikes on a school sheltering forcibly displaced Palestinians in Jabalia, northern Gaza. A medical source told Turkey's Anadolu agency that at least 16 people, including women and children, were killed in that attack. And this is a picture of the aftermath of some of the bodies of the people who were killed in that attack. The Israeli military briefly paused the attacks on Gaza when Alexander was released, but they resumed them pretty quickly. And so also on Monday, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, the IPC, which is a famine watchdog that tracks hunger crises around the world, warned that famine was imminent in Gaza if Israel did not lift its blockade on aid and all other goods. The IPC said, quote, "The entire population is facing high levels of acute food insecurity, with 500,000 people, one in five, facing starvation," end quote. So daily slaughter and starvation continues. All right, so the next one here, Israeli troops killed civilian during Hamas attack and covered it up. This article is from Middle East Eye. So the Israeli military killed an Israeli civilian, Tom Godo, on October 8th, 2023, while he was hiding in the safe room of his home with his wife and three daughters, and covered up the incident. And this was revealed by Channel 13 on Sunday. An Israeli spokesperson confirmed the report, saying that the IDF determined that he was apparently killed by IDF gunfire directed at the door of the safe room. Godo's widow, Limor Havdala, described to Channel 13 the events that led to her husband's death. At 6:30 a.m. on October 7th, the Godo family rushed to their safe room in the kibbutz, which is near the Gaza border, following the launch of the Hamas-led attacks on Israel. The army reached their home at only 4:20 p.m., so hours later after the attack started. I mean, wow, 6:30 a.m. to 4:20 p.m. When they left, the soldiers promised that more help was on the way and that the family would be evacuated by the army. During the day, the army safely evacuated many of the kibbutz's residents, but nobody came to rescue Godo's family, his wife said. Then during the night, Israeli forces arrived and fought against Hamas combatants. At 7:30 a.m. on Sunday, October 8th, while the Godos were still confined in their safe room, they heard a knock on the door and someone requesting to open it. He went to the door and asked who was there. And in response, shots were fired at the safe room. So it was the Israeli military who shot through the door. And then they decided to cover it up. So this has just come out. All right, so the next one here, the U.S. replaces B-2s at Diego Garcia with B-52s. So the U.S. is replacing the B-2 stealth bombers it deployed to its base at Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean with B-52 bombers, and this was reported by Reuters. So the U.S. began deploying B-2 bombers to Diego Garcia in March as President Trump was threatening to bomb Yemen and was carrying out very heavy airstrikes in... he was threatening to bomb Iran, and he was carrying out very heavy airstrikes in Yemen. Trump also deployed an additional aircraft carrier to the Middle East, a second THAAD missile defense system to Israel, and other air assets to the region. And between March 15th and May 6th, the U.S. launched over 1,000 strikes on Yemen, killing over 200 civilians. According to Fox News reporter Jennifer Griffin, the U.S. used the B-2 bombers that it deployed to Diego Garcia for some of the attacks. So they were using two aircraft carriers and B-2 bombers, heavy bombers, in their bombing campaign in Yemen. This picture here is a B-52. Tensions in the region have cooled since Trump ended his bombing campaign in Yemen and the U.S. held several rounds of talks with Iran. But the U.S. is maintaining this additional force posture in the region, and the Trump administration has still been threatening an attack on Iran if negotiations to reach a nuclear deal fail. even though there's no evidence that Tehran is working toward a nuclear weapon. That's according to U.S. intelligence agencies. Satellite images have shown that in recent days, 4 B-52 bombers and at least 6 B-2s have been deployed to the base. And the U.S. officials speaking to Reuters said that the B-52s were there to replace some of the B-2s. And really the main difference, as I understand it, between the B-2 and the B-52 is the B-2's stealth ability. They can both carry.
That was a report from antiwar.com with the latest news on what's happening in terms of what's happening in Palestine in the Arab world. And that's the kind of news we've been curating every week for the past year and a half. And Sataria here has an announcement about a very important show that we're going to be, or a program, a day-long program tomorrow that we're going to be doing it. And we can only do it with your support. You want to talk about that, Sataria?
Yes, we want to invite your listeners to tune in to Radio Free Palestine tomorrow from 8 a.m. until 7 p.m. It's with stations all across North America who will be contributing and simulcasting the program. And it's because of listeners like your listeners to this show, as well as listeners to WPFW and supporters of WPFW all these years, that have allowed us to bring Radio Free Palestine to you. I don't even know how long we've been. It's been an annual tradition at WPFW for quite a while now that we air Radio Free Palestine. And it's because of the dollars and the voices of the people right here that allows WPFW to bring this program to life each year.
And it's an incredible.
So if you support, right, yeah. It is an incredible program. Yeah. And with different voices from all over the continent, talking about different aspects of the issue in Palestine. And it's just, it's a wonderful program. And if you've ever listened to it, if you have interest in listening to it, if you just appreciate that WPFW is bringing it to you, we ask you to show your support and make your donation. It's 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. You can also go online and click donate now at our website, wpfwfm.org. Please consider becoming a sustainer today. You can do it for as little as $10 a month, as much as $1,000, $10,000 a month, depending upon your budget. But we ask you to help support this wonderful program, Shewanana, to support the station that brings you this wonderful program, as well as things like Radio Free Palestine that will be airing tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m.
And this is the show that brings you not just the latest in terms of news, but the latest in terms of culture, in terms of literature and music. We've had less culture in the past year and a half because we've been in emergency mode on this program, and the station in general, of course, WPFW, has been following closely this genocide and what's happening around it. And so that's an important thing to mention. So again, if you want to sustain this kind of programming and allow us to do things like have an all-day program with people that have been on the ground, such as Radio Free Palestine, what we're going to do tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. And the show that comes to you every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Our motto is we spin the tunes and unspin the news. And that's what we've been doing. And there was a lot of unspinning for us to do for the last year and a half, because the mainstream media really demystified how fascism spreads by being silent and gaslighting its their readers, and the age of mass media, I think, is diminishing, thank goodness, and thanks to social media, and thanks to an oasis of, again, of free speech, an oasis of independent reporting, an oasis that's immune to censorship or to influence, financial influence, such as WPFW, that has been doing that has been doing the work that's necessary. And we'll see you next Wednesday.
Nice. We want to make sure to give the number. Keep calling, keep supporting. 202-588-9739. It's never too late to donate.
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Today, a federal judge ordered the release of Badr Khan Suri after months of ICE detention. Khan Suri is a postdoctoral student at Georgetown University who originally hails from India. He was arrested by ICE officers in March, and despite never being charged, he has been detained in Texas after the Trump administration revoked his student visa. Khan Suri's wife is a former Al Jazeera employee from Palestine, also studying at Georgetown. His wife's father was a former high-level Hamas advisor, leading to the false allegation that Khan Suri is a terrorist. The judge ruled that Khan Suri was innocent and that ICE had violated his First and Fifth Amendment rights. In related news, a day after a grand jury indicted Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan, her attorneys today are asking her federal charges be dismissed, citing her judicial immunity and the 10th Amendment. Dugan is accused of helping an undocumented migrant flee arrest at her courthouse last month as President Trump's illegal immigration crackdown continues. She was indicted in federal court with obstructing or impeding a proceeding and concealing an individual to prevent his discovery and arrest. The two charges carry a maximum penalty of 6 years in prison. Members of her defense team said in a short statement responding to the charges, quote, "As she said after her unnecessary arrest, Judge Dugan asserts her innocence and looks forward to be vindicated in court," close quote. In other news, President Trump is in Qatar today as he continues a multi-day tour of the Middle East, in which he has pressed to sign major deals between American companies and wealthy Gulf state entities. Trump today announced a $200 billion deal for Qatar to purchase 160 jets from U.S. airplane manufacturer Boeing. What didn't come up so far today is President Trump's plan to accept a plane from Qatar to be used as Air Force One. The plan raises serious legal questions, given the Constitution's Emoluments Clause, which prohibits government officials from accepting gifts without the consent of Congress. Senator Chuck Schumer said he is halting all of President Trump's nominees to the Justice Department until the agency reports what it knows about Qatar's offer. President Trump responded today from Air Force One by saying, quote, "Schumer, you know, has become a Palestinian," close quote. And the House continues its debate on President Trump's 2026 budget plan, aimed at cutting hundreds of billions of dollars while providing extensive tax breaks. Most of the cuts will affect programs and agencies that the president has previously denounced, including a 26% cut to Health and Human Services discretionary spending aimed at curbing ongoing research. Deep cuts are also planned for SNAP, the nation's largest anti-hunger program, as well as Medicaid. Yesterday, 25 people were arrested, protesting cuts to Medicaid, including many in wheelchairs, at the House Energy